So I was told that I can start anytime, and I think I'm gonna start right now because there is no way in the world I can finish what I think I wanted to say. So the title of my talk is gonna be Non-Equilibrium ADS-CFT. And so there will be very few, I'm not gonna go into technical details. So technically it's a very complicated subject, at least the stuff that I'm gonna talk about. But what I think is gonna be useful for you is if I give you some broad perspective, what can be done and what has been done, at least from my perspective in this. And so this is the outline what I want to go through. So I will start with a very long introduction, and then I go and discuss summary of results for the transport properties in strongly coupled plasma from equilibrium correlation functions. And so there's going to be so what I want to emphasize are consistency of hydrodynamic description within ADS-CFT. So this is something that is almost trivial if you do quantum field theory, but it's highly non-trivial in the context of ADS-CFT. And in fact, it will be this is going to be very useful later. Then I will go and I will say something about transport properties of gauge series, which have a compact transport space. So those are hydrodynamics on tori. And so I'll discuss first. So if you wish, we'll just take a standard hydrodynamics, and then we'll write down how does the Bjorken flow look like for those series, and then we'll study Bjorken flow of gauge series on tori. The reason, my motivation here, and will be clear later, is that I feel this is this is a first step. If you wanna ask questions, how do you describe hadronization in a context of ADS-CFT? And so those will be toy models, and that's why I'm particularly interested in those models now. So this is stuff that this is old stuff already published. This is something new, hasn't been published yet. And then I mentioned something about transport properties of 5-brain, 4-brain, 3-brains on circle and stuff like that. So I'm going to talk about ADS-CFT, so that's correspondence between gauge theory and string theory. And so you might expect that you can learn both ways. And so this is the way how my talk is divided. So all this stuff up here, if you wish, I will use string theory to learn something about gauge series, to make some specific prediction, something that that you can verify. But again, you should expect that somehow gauge theory is also useful to string theory. And that's what I find actually very fascinating. And so that's the other way around, how gauge theory, what can they teach us about string theory? And the subject here is transport properties of gauge theory plasma at finite coupling. So I don't know how much I can get into that. Okay, so I encourage you, so even though it's said it's a talk, but I'd rather prefer it to be a discussion, and for one reason that I want to learn something from what you think is interested, and also tell you some things that you might find interesting. That's why please interrupt me anytime and ask questions. Okay, so it's non-equilibrium ADS-CFT. So again, what I want to say is that the bulk of the talk is gauge theory hydrodynamics. As predicted by string theory. I want to emphasize is that I'm not doing models here, so I'm not doing something like a phenomenological ADS-CFT. I think there is a lot that we can learn if we take a string theory at a face value and try to formulate problems in that model and see what that will predict. Okay, there are other complementary approaches which is good, but this is not what I'm going to talk about today. So another aspect is that even though the title of my talk is called ADS-CFT, but a lot what I'm going to talk about is not only to conformal gauge theories. Okay, so in other words, gauge theory does not have to be conformal. And so what I'm going to spend some time right now is to discuss various ways how you can model breaking of scale invariance in the context of ADS-CFT. So those are models that has been studied, and you can compute pretty much everything there and see what the outcomes are. Okay, so let's look at the CFT, right? So a CFT, and then there is some non-conformal field theory. So CFT is scale invariance, and so in order to go to non-CFT, we need to break scale invariance. And you can imagine there are two broad ways how you can break the scale invariance. So one way how you can break scale invariance is by explicit breaking. So in other words, so it's explicit breaking of scale invariance. And so the way how you can think you can do it is that you just give masses to some of the fields, right? So you, typically, if you look at the n equal 4, there are chiral multiplets which are massless, and so you can give mass to some of them, right? So you pretty much turn on non-zero masses, so that's an explicit breaking. And so an example here. Example here is the so-called n equal to star gauge theory. Okay, so this is a model which has the following Lagrangian, L n equal to star. So you start with a Lagrangian of n equal four gauge theory, and then you deform it by turning on masses, and so this deformation takes on this particular form. So I'm writing it in a superfield language, right? So this is M over G and mil squared trace of Q squared plus trace Q tilde squared, okay? So what I am doing here is that I take two chiral superfields in n equal 4 gauge theory. So they form n equal 2 hypermultiplet, and I'm giving a mass to it. Okay? So that will break me conformal invariance. I will get an interesting non-conformal gauge theory plasma, and I can study properties of it. So another way to do this, so what I can do, what can happen is that there is a spontaneous breaking of scale invariance. So basically here, we start with a theory which is classically doesn't have any scale, but there is a dynamical generation of scale. So much like what happens in real QCD.
Then it's not a CFT to start with.
Sorry?
Then it is not a CFT to start with.
Then it is not one.
It's not a CFT from the beginning.
No, it's not. Neither is this, right? N equal 2 star is also not a CFT.
The one on top.
No, I'm saying that the CFT, what that's supposed to show is that there are various ways how I can go from the CFT.
Okay? When the scale invariance is broken, it's not a CFT.
True. But again, for example, here, what happens is that as you go to a UV, the scale invariance is being restored, right? So the same thing happens there as well. Okay? And again, the reason why I want to give you this broad class of models, because just to give you an idea of what can be done in the context of ADS-CFT and what has been done and what as a result. So some of the things, as you know, are universal. Some of them are non-universal. And so I want to give you the spectrum of how this thing changes depending which models we look at. Okay? So again, so So these, as Pavel said, that's another example of non-conformal gauge theory. So a specific example that happens here that we can discuss here. So this is a theory which is known to some of you, the so-called cascading theory. So this is a theory SUN cross SUN plus K. So this theory has bifundamentals. So this theory also have a quartic superpotential, right? So it has some superpotential. So the reason why this theory is in this class is because so you have two gauge groups, so there will be two gauge couplings. And so it turns out that the matter contact in this theory is such that I can define beta plus minus, so those are beta functions, right? So they will plus or minus describe the running one of these combinations, right? And so it turns out that in this model, again, those are the analysis that you can do. This is just a one loop running. So what you will find out is that beta plus equal to zero. So the sum of two couplings does not run, but the difference of two coupling runs, okay? And so that's why the theory is actually, in some sense, very close to what is happening in real QCD. Yes, that's called a spontaneous. Sorry?
It's just an anomalous.
It's an anomalous breaking of scale invariants.
So you see, spontaneous breaking usually is if you still have the symmetries, but just the ground state.
Right. So.
And as many people pointed out here, in QCD, that's not the case. The theory doesn't have the symmetries.
Right. So if you wish, in this case, there is, I would say that, okay, so then it's a bit of a stretch to say that that's like QCD. So in this model, there is indeed, I have to think of the symmetry breaking here as spontaneous symmetry breaking, because this symmetry, at least in the large end limit, is going to be restored in the UV. So this is a symmetry that's being broken. So there is a breaking of this symmetry by a vacuum.
No, but there is a dynamical scale that is generated, right? So the scale invariance is not spontaneously broken.
I mean, spontaneous breaking would be if you go somewhere in the moduli space.
Yeah, that's
spontaneous. Well, okay, so it's language, right? So there are these two classes. There are these two classes of models. So in this model, at least here, so there is no phase transition at finite coupling. Okay. So in some sense, even though the theory is non-conformal, not much interesting happening. So there is no phase transition here. And. So what happens here is that the thermodynamics of this theory is quite rich. So here there is a first order confinement deconfinement phase transition. So there can be a confinement-deconfinement transition at zero temperature. If you wish, it's always in a deconfined phase. Yeah. So what happens here is that you compute a free energy, right? And you find out that the free energy always stays negative in this model. Again, you know, the study there is quite complicated, so I cannot go, strictly speaking, to zero temperature, but to fairly low temperatures, much lower than the scale, so I can look. There is a ratio M over T, and so I can look at low temperatures, M over T is of order 10 or 20, and there is still no phase transition to a confining phase.
This theory doesn't have a mass gap, right? N equals 2 star. It has
no
Coulomb branch. So
yeah. Right, so I'm saying that, so in this model what happens is there is no phase transition. On the other hand, we can discuss this later, but some people, you might have expected there is an interesting phase transition expected when you go on a Coulomb branch, right? So how many degrees of freedom you are, right? So on a Coulomb branch, there are of order n degrees of freedom because the low energy effective action is just U1 to the n, and then in a deconfining phase you have n squared degrees of freedom. So for some long time we thought that there can be an interesting phase transition which characterizes change of degrees of freedom from n squared to n. And then naively you would expect if there is a phase transition of this type, it will happen roughly at temperatures m over t of order 1. And so the claim here is that you can go actually and study this model at much lower temperatures and you still don't see it. Yeah. So that would be, again, I don't really know how to interpret this would be phase transition, but I'm saying that it's pretty, I don't know why we, I mean, it just isn't there. It doesn't look like it's there, though. So on the other hand here, Right, so at zero temperatures there is a huge Coulomb branch here, right? So unfortunately in the supergravity what we can do, we can just describe a single point on the Coulomb branch of this series. Those are the limitations of the construction. So I cannot explore, you know, I cannot explore other modula. Right?
But
at
any temperature, modulator.
Yes, that's correct, yes. Right, but see, the thing is that it's not clear. So I'm telling you that I start heating up the theory with a particular point on the moduli space, right? So I heat it back and then I cool it down. And so it's not clear that it should end up at that, you know, at the same point where you started, right? Precisely for the reason that the moduli are lifted, so. But again, so. So that's why we expected something interesting could happen, right? There will be some indications of instabilities, or but we did not find anything there. Okay.
If you add one more mass to break it to n equals one, then there can be lots of interesting phases which
sure.
can find.
Sure. Sure. The problem there, and that's what Joe Polchinski and Matt Strassler discussed, right? So the problem there is that at least the models that I'm talking here are the one where I can compute everything. So as you know, this Polchinski-Strassley geometry is known in some limits, but the exact solution is not known. So it's an interesting thing to discuss, but again, I want to tell what you can get exactly, okay, no approximation. So there's the usual thing. We have to be in the Lagian limit. We have to be in the supergravity approximation, except for this last point. But so that's why I'm limited to the model that I'm mentioning.
In both cases, conformal field theory doesn't play a role. Huh? I mean, you have two models, and they're not conformal invariant.
Sure. But I find it interesting, right? Because that allows us to study hydrodynamics, to study hydrodynamics of theories which are probably close to QCD. Okay. And so let me go back here. So just to finish thermodynamics. So there is a first order confinement deconfinement. Phase transition here, and so also this phase transition is actually associated with a breaking of chiral symmetry. So there will be a forthcoming paper in which we will show that that's indeed the case. So in other words, there is no phase in this theory where the model is deconfined, but the chiral symmetry is broken. Okay, so what I just said is that it looks like, at least in this model, this confinement, deconfinement, and chiral symmetry breaking restoration, they are single phase transition. Okay, chiral symmetry break. All right, so very good. So those are the class of models when I will be quoting results. Again, I will be giving some results for models of this type and also for a large class of conformal fields here. Yeah. So before before I will go to discuss actually non-equilibrium gauge theory plasma, let me mention something, some neat facts that come up from study of just plain thermodynamics here. Okay, and I find it even though that doesn't explain anything, but I find it that it surprisingly mimics the lattice data, right? So many of you know that when I do a lattice QCD, so there is a plateau, if I plot the energy density versus T to the fourth, and so it looks like that the thermodynamics in this reduced variable is flat, right? And so there is sort of an indication of the conformal, of the near conformal behavior very close to a phase transition, okay? And as far as I know, there is no explanation for that. I'm not gonna offer you an explanation, but I'm gonna tell you what the analogous thing here is, okay? And so this is what I find very surprising, that somehow this strongly coupled non-conformal gauge series sort of mimic these results. Just to give you an idea, again, let's look at this model. So let's talk about a bit thermodynamics of n equal to star. Right. So I can look. So what do we have in this model? So in this model we have a massless state, right? So there is a massless sector. And then there are also massive states, right? So there is a hypermultiplet, and I give a mass to a hypermultiplet. So if I set at zero coupling, so if I set Jiang Mills equal to zero, and I can ask how does my free energy look like? And so the free energy takes this form, so it's going to be minus T to the fourth, right? And then there is one, so I'm not writing down all the coefficients here. One is just the contribution from this massless sector states. And then there is contribution from massive hypers. And so as you well know, so it will take this form, e to the minus m over t. Okay, so, yep. Well, at this stage, it's non-interacting. So I'm just looking at the gas of n equal to, so it's a... See, what I did, I put the coupling to zero, so nothing...
Well, you put it to zero, but right.
Of course it is interacting, right? It's just because, see, there are, if you, so there are, there is a massless chiral multiplet here, right? And then of course you are gauge bosons. You have gauge bosons.
Okay, so
right. So I'm talking about this.
This deformation reduces a flow to a non-trivial CFT.
No, there is no CFT in the infrared.
But if you interact in massless fields, right? You see this is a CFT.
Right. So non-interacting massless field is always a CFT. Right. No, I think it's trivial. It's just a gas of free bosons and fermions. And all you have to do is just to decompose them. Some of them are massive, some of them are massless, and you compute free energy. So there will be two contributions. So, and you will find out, so there is a contribution from massless states, and then there is a contribution from massive states.
What is your approximation? What Pavel says is your approximation in reality.
Yeah.
Very different.
Sure, and I'm going to tell this. I'm just going to tell this what happens and why. So I'm saying I'm going to give you first the naive result, right? So so the important thing I want to emphasize here is that there are Boltzmann suppression tails in the thermodynamics. And so what you expect, at least at zero coupling, that when temperature is afforded a scale that breaks scale invariance, temperature is afforded M, you actually expect large deviation from the conformal thermodynamics. That's the only point I want to make.
But I guess what Pavel was actually interesting. So you have finite mass.
Yes.
And what happens at low energies? And find that coupling. Are you getting a CFT or is it a theory with a mass gap?
No. There is mass gap. I mean, you know what happened. It's Cyber-Whitten model. So there is a conformal, there is a Coulomb branch, and then there are, you know, massive dions and monopoles, right? So, but.
But if there is a gap, what is the massive sector? What is the massive sector?
Well, we are on a Coulomb branch, right? So there are U1s. There are massless U1s, if you wish. There are massless states, there is gap, and then there is massless. There is a moduli space, yeah.
So exact statement is that you do have massless states.
Yes, there are massless states.
After you take into account.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
So there is no gap for these states.
There is no gap for this state, right? But then there are other massive states.
There is a gap for other states.
Sure. Okay, so what I want to emphasize here is that if I look at the free energy, so you can see these Boltzmann suppression tails, and you expect a deviation from conformal equation of state, right? So pressure equals 1/3 energy density. So you expect this to be a large deviation when mass is afforded the temperature. So and on the other hand, what I just said before, this naive intuition appears to contradict the lattice QCD computation, right? So on lattice, we have conformal-like equation of state, even close to phase transition.
I don't think that's true, actually. I mean, on lattice, they can measure P minus V E.
Right.
Energy is conformal.
Right, the energy, I know the energy, but pressure. Right, but we can discuss this. There is a way to understand also just from plain thermodynamics why energy looks like to be more conformal than. Yeah, I know. So, but what I want to say is that now, what I can do, I can study in a dual picture, I can study this plasma in a limit when the Hooft coupling is very large, right? So I'm in a supergravity approximation, so that's a strongly coupled plasma. So it's described by some complicated black hole, and I can study the thermodynamics of this black hole. And I can ask, how does the free energy of this black hole behave at low temperatures? And so what you will find out, first of all, at very high temperatures, you require.
Why is it non-analytic in mass over T?
Sorry?
Why is it non-analytic?
Again, just take a massive, this is just ideal gas.
M is parameter. Okay, parameter.
So if you wish, I'm just writing you the thermodynamics of of Boltzmann gas. Right. So, well, you know, finite temperature corrections can have a non-analytic dependence, right? So there is non-analyticity coming from. So there is a thermal mass, right, that's being generated. And
it's fixing M and then take T to zero. What you were asking is.
And then
the
end
is
zero.
But
this is for
large
yeah.
This is large
yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah. Okay, so let's go to strongly coupled description. So this is described by some complicated black hole. And again, I'm in this regime, right? So M over T is not. So I have, we can actually extract the thermodynamics of that black hole. And so M over T is not much less than 1. So I can study when it is afforded 1 and when it's actually much larger than 1. And so what you will find out that the free energy at low temperatures takes this form. So there is minus T to the fourth, which is your conformal behavior. And then you actually recover this Boltzmann suppression factor. But the thing is that the mass, again, so you do the analysis and you get numerically the expression for the free energy of this black hole. And then you can fit it, so you can find out that it's a very nice fit with this exponential suppression, except that this effective mass here turns out not to be your microscopic mass, but it's roughly 1/7 of the microscopic mass. So what this tells you that you will see, at least in this model, large deviation from scale invariance, not when you naively expect it. If you were to look at equilibrium, at weak coupling, but you expect actually large deviation at a much lower temperature.
Do you reproduce sketches
in one? Sure.
So you have a standard massless distribution and plus
expectation. Well, okay, so in that regime, that exponential is very close to one. So if you wish, you can.
So you mentioned that your gravity solution is for some particular point in the model.
Right.
So what is this point?
So it's We can talk. So
it's not the origin.
No, it's not the origin. First of all, as you know, there is no origin in the Zweibrücken. I mean, the origin of the moduli space is lifted. So this is some particular point where there is some specific distribution of brains. So the exact point has been identified some years ago. So we did it with Joe Pulczynski and Amanda P.
Question I have about yep. that. You have a coefficient 1 here, not its exponential mt, but just 1 related to the mass exponent.
Right.
I'm trying to understand. Do you
well,
have
this
1 related to the mass exponent on the right hand side?
Well, again, I told you, so I get an expression for the free energy as a function of m over t, right? So I get a plot. Then it is my choice how do I present my data. So what I am saying is that I choose to parameterize the data in this way. And
when t goes to 0, it doesn't go to 1. And effectively, you say it's 1 over 7 of n.
But then numerically, again, so this is, so I can, as I said, I can look to temperatures which are for the 10 or 20. I cannot go exactly to 0 temperature. So this black hole you construct numerically.
This is numerical fit.
Yeah, that's numerical fit if you wish.
Can you just extract 1 in front of this numerical fit plus something else? I would identify 1 with the 1 here with this mass exponent. Or it makes no sense.
Well, first of all, you know, it's not clear to me that you will have massless modes at finite temperature if I make coupling very large, right? So there will.
Yeah, you mentioned before that you do have coupless modes, even if you have interaction. It is exact statement.
At zero temperature.
The variable temperature inside is
more. Yes. So, I would expect that there will be a thermal mass generated for them. Okay.
Can you extract the asymptotes of large T on a limited?
You at large t, m over t is very small. No, it's very it's very difficult. One of the reasons is associated with something that Pavel was mentioning. I mean, so you are on a moduli space, right? And I said that I'm hitting a specific point on this moduli space, right? But then as I cool it down, it's not clear to me that that the point that I will end up with is the correct point, right?
Temperature when you just, if you are in equilibrium, it doesn't matter how you get to this point. You
right.
can just cool it down, and after that you heat it up, and if you do exactly the same procedure, you come to the same point. The only way to get a different point, if you are not in the equilibrium, in this case I agree.
Wait, there are moduli space. At finite temperature, all those moduli are lifted, which means that I don't have a moduli space. I have a single point, right? So what I can do, I can choose a point which would be lifted, right? But that point I can heat it, right? So at least at high temperatures, that will be a nice state of the theory. But now as I am cooling down, I will not...
Practically, you come to the same point, even if the thermodynamical...
Right, okay, so good. So...
adiabatically, if you do exactly this, adiabatically,
right, so,
you must come to the same point.
So,
what's the specific heat of the
lattice?
Is it positive or negative?
It's well defined specific heat. It's always positive. Yeah.
If it is not, yeah.
What happens if you get lower and lower and the heat is wrong?
It's doing numerics is much more difficult. Okay, so in principle, it's much more.
How this fine temperature solution interpolates to zero temperature solution? That part
you
don't know.
I don't know that. Yes. So, but when you do this solution, at least the results that you can get, you can extract for the black hole independently energy, free energy. And entropy density. You see that they satisfy the first law of thermodynamics, you see they satisfy all the necessary thermodynamic relations, so you have a huge consistency check. Yeah. And of course, as I go to lower and lower temperature, I need to do much more precise numerics. So it's interesting to study what will happen at zero temperature in this model, but I'm saying it hasn't been done. Okay, very good. So I think I'm done with what I wanted to say about equilibrium. So now I go to non-equilibrium gauge theory plasma. Okay, it took me a little bit longer. So. So non-equilibrium. So I can see that there are two different approaches how we can ask questions about non-equilibrium gauge theory. One is that if we use a linear response theory, okay. So if I use linear response. So then what we can extract transport properties by looking at equilibrium correlation function. So in some sense, we're cheating the system a little bit. We ask a question about non-equilibrium dynamics, but everything that we ever compute are the equilibrium correlation functions. So the reason why this is possible is this linear response, right? So we can extract transport properties and those transport properties like shear, bulk viscosities, and so on. So this we can do from equilibrium correlation function. And so the original work here is by Andrei Schon and Pavel. But then there is another approach, okay, which people started discussing rather recently, and I feel that it has huge potential. So the idea here is just to make plasma flow, okay? So what we want to do, we want to make plasma flow. So once the plasma will flow, we can extract the same transport properties by studying the flow of this plasma. So we can extract the same transport properties. Okay, but I would claim. I would claim that we can do much more here. So if we have a flow of plasma, as the plasma expands, it cools, so the temperature drops down. So I can take one of the models, for example, the models that I raised here, where there is confinement-deconfinement phase transition. And so if you make that plasma flow and cool down, then you can actually study dynamically the transition through the confinement-deconfinement. And so you can interpret this as hadronization. So in fact, you can ask tons of interesting questions. How long does it take for plasma to cool before you go to a phase transition? How does that time scale measure with, for example, relaxation time in plasma? So this could be questions that that are of direct relevance, for example, to RIG, or at least in this model. So we can, I would claim that those questions can be studied in this setup. Okay, so for example, we can study hadronization. And so the original work here is a work by Yannick and collaborators a couple years ago. And then a recent work by Minwala et al. So it looks a little bit different on the first sight. However, you can show that if I take Minwala setup, and I restrict it to a boost invariant frame, then I will get back Yannick. And so we will explain this in a forthcoming paper. So I will give an overview what has been extracted here. But let me just discuss a little bit more this side. And so so the question that I want to ask is what kind of flow we can rigorously study in ADS-CFT. Of course, we can do lots of modelings, but I want to give you the feeling of why this is difficult and what actually can be done, I think, realistically, with the current technology on ADS-CFT. So on the gauge theory side, we want to make our plasma flow. So we need to specify some time-dependent background geometry. And then the idea is that we will take an energy density. We put that energy density in this time-dependent background geometry and see how it expands. So if I talk about d-dimensional, d plus 1 dimensional physics, then the geometry will take this form. So it's some g mu nu, right? T depends on time. In principle, can be inhomogeneous. Dx mu and dx mu. So at this stage, if you wish, I'm talking only about the vacuum property of the series. So just a description of a background. There is no energy density here. Okay. So this is just a background. Gauge theory on which we will study flow.
So when you say that flow is kind of equivalent to cosmological expansion, you simply mean that you choose your coordinates?
Right. So I'm leaving. I'm starting in a co-moving frame. Yeah. That's actually what I am trying to say. I'm trying to give you an idea what are the restrictions of what kind of flows we can study. Okay? And
But any kind of flow, you say, is just a coordinate transformation.
No, I haven't said that. That's what you said. I haven't said that. No. Let me just say what I want to say. Okay. So first we start with a background, and now we need to construct a supergravity or string theory dual to this background. And so in general, so this will be some 10-dimensional geometry. So what happens is that this cosmological background on the gauge theory side will be a metric on the boundary. So the full 10-dimensional geometry will be much more complicated. So it will depend on this y coordinate. So y is a vector, y1 up to y, whatever, 9 minus d, the transverse coordinates, including the radial coordinate. And then t as well, d as d plus 1 squared, right? So we have our metric at the boundary. And then there is a transverse metric, right? dyi, dyj. And so the idea here is that we're going to solve the supergravity equations of motion of the geometry in this type. And in general, it will be horribly complicated. The reason is that you will be dealing with the partial differential equations, okay? So which means that suppose you know ADS, what I'm saying is that suppose you know, I guess I'm assuming here that you know the ADS. So here is your ADS side. Here is your CFT side. And so I'm assuming you know exactly the correspondence when the gauge theory is in the Minkowski space. And now you ask, if I know that, how can I extend it to some more interesting backgrounds? And the answer here is that you will always get PDEs. Okay. So there are important simplifications. A lot of simplifications occur when these PDEs will get reduced to ODEs, and that happens when this manifold, right? So if I call, this is a metric on some MD plus one, right? So when MD plus one is a space of constant curvature. So this is pretty much the answer. So in principle, you should be able to do everything, but in practice, finding a solution of PDEs is very complicated. And on the other hand, if you take this space to be a space of constant curvature, then there is, a way how you can understand the deformation of the original ADS-CFT duality and formulate a duality on these spaces. So what kind of spaces of constant curvature we have?
What is the relation to plasma expansion here?
The relation, so as we just said, so there is a cosmology. In this cosmology, I put my fluid. It's d-dimensional, but right, d-spatial dimensional. So again, you have an expanding background, and I put a fluid there, and I ask, how does my fluid flow in a co-moving frame? To Rieck, there will be a relation to Rieck if you wait a second. First of all, what I'm saying is not necessarily have to have any relation to Rieck. But, you know.
Are you saying it's always true that the PDE is reduced to ODE squared?
Right, that's a correct statement. So if you have, let me put it this way. If you know ADS-CFT duality in the Minkowski space, then I can always construct you. It will be some deformation of.
So the reason I'm asking you is so because in Janik's case,
yes,
it's looking for this European.
Right.
The dual of the European function. And that European function is a metric that's flat.
Yes, that's one example. Right. And that's exactly where I am heading.
In that case, I think they don't get these
dual. No, because, okay, so. That's because the background itself are ODEs. The background, we are talking about the background before we put any energy density. Take Yannick setup and put zero energy density, then it will be ADS with a boundary where your Poincaré patch is written as a Milne universe. That's all what it is, and that's ODEs. So we are at that level. I'm not yet putting any energy density. This is the important step. Before you will start asking all this interesting question, how does my fluid behave? You better know how to describe the ADS-CFT dual for the background geometry itself.
So when you say background geometry, is there temperature there or not?
It's pure kinematics, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just kinematics.
Yeah. No. Here I'm talking about dynamical. So if you wish, gauge theory formulated in some expanding cosmology. Yeah. And so, so what I'm saying here is that there are three possibilities. So we can have ADS d plus one. We can have a flat space, right? So we can have flat space, or we can have a de Sitter space. Okay. So each of them are interesting. Well, okay. So here you might discard this because you have a scalars, and so typically the scalars here will be a conformally coupled scalar. So typically there are instabilities when you formulate your gauge theory on spaces of negative curvatures. But those are two other possibilities, right? So the first one here is something. Something that David mentioned. So a very nice example is a Bjorken frame, right? So this is it's a flat geometry, right? And this is something that is related to Rick. I'm assuming I don't have to explain this, how and why. Okay, so there is some d minus one dimensional. So that's one possibility. But second possibility that I find interesting as well is to study the expansion in a de Sitter in de Sitter background. However, we can study the expansion in de Sitter background. Something that I learned very recently, but it has been known, I'm sure, to cosmologists because I found it in, you know, you open up pretty much any paper and you see the statement, is that if I take a CFT fluid, and even if that fluid has a shear viscosity, because it's a CFT fluid, there will be no bulk viscosity, then it will flow in a de Sitter space exactly like ideal fluid. And the reason for that is that the shear stresses vanish in a de Sitter expansion. So this is interesting, but in order for me to get something non-trivial, something nice here, I need to talk about non-conformal field theories, theories which have bulk viscosity, for example, and that's very difficult.
But isn't like the shear viscosity doesn't matter if you have spherical expansion?
Sir?
Isn't like shear viscosity does not matter if you have spherical expansion?
In some sense, yes.
Is this
right. So there is a shear. I'm going to write it down sometime later, but I'm not going to make it anyway. So I can write it down here. So there is a T mu nu, right? So it takes the form epsilon plus P U mu U nu plus P G mu nu. Have to look. And then there is a shear. Right. Let me write it down in this way. So there is epsilon u nu plus p, and there is this projector, and there is minus eta sigma mu nu, and then there is, in principle, bulk viscosity delta mu nu. U is your velocity four vector, eta and psi, shear and bulk viscosity. So delta mu nu is just g mu nu plus u mu u nu. And then this sigma mu nu is a little bit more complicated. So it's delta mu alpha delta mu beta, nabla alpha u beta plus nabla beta u alpha, and then minus 2 divided by d delta mu nu delta alpha beta u beta, right? And so the statement is that if I give you an explicit expression for the how would the stress energy tensor of the viscous fluid will behave in any space-time. So now if you take the inflationary patch of a de Sitter, what you will find out that sigma mu nu equal to zero, but you also find that this is true as well, a covariant derivative. So which means that once you start writing your hydrodynamic equations, which are equations of motion for the, for the conservation of the stress energy tensor, the shear viscosity will never end.
For a particular change of view?
Yes, in a co-moving frame.
Which is a key invariant of the space, you're saying that the community is in GD.
No, and it doesn't have to be, it can flow, right? So I put an energy density, it will be diluted, right? There is a, it will dilute like radiation, right? Okay, so let's see. So, good. So now what I'm going to do is in the remaining 4 minutes, so I'm like page 3 of 16 pages. So I'm just going to give you, so I'm saying that, okay, let me just wrap up this part. So you can study, it's a feasible problem to ask, so I just argued that we can construct a gravitational background dual to this gauge theory. And so now I can ask the question, so what will, if I take this gravitational dual in which I do not turn on any normalizable component of the background of the metric, I can now go ahead and turn on the normalizable components in this gravitational dual, which corresponds on the gauge theory side, that I'm giving some energy density to my gauge theory. And then my ODEs will become PDEs. They will still be simple enough PDEs. They will be PDEs in a radial coordinate and the proper time. And so that is type of the problem that Yannick has been studying. How does my plasma will expand? So I will talk about this next week. So I probably should skip talking about this boost invariant plasma here. And rather what I want to do in the remaining time.
Sorry, sir, before you move on, how do you envisage
right. So this is, I erased a bunch of things. So for that, you can. So for example, one thing that comes up in study here is that the energy density. Well, if you look at a conformal plasma, let's look at the simplest example, n equal 4. So epsilon is a 4 to t to the fourth. Right. In the proper time, it will be expanding minus 4/3. So what happens? The reason for that. Is that the temperature drops. So you can show that actually going to late proper time corresponds to approach to the equilibrium. You can show this rigorously. I'll show that next week. So what you see that there is a temperature drops as you go to late time. Now, study confinement deconfinement is a very difficult problem in ADS CFT. In particular in infinite volume. So I would claim that the only true example that's known is this cascading H theory. However, as you will very well know, you can study the so-called kinematic confinement. So you can study models in which you take H theory plasma and you compactify on a circle. And then there is what you would interpret confinement-deconfinement phase transition in that system. And so that's exactly the type of models in which we are writing down the paper of studying Bjorking expansion in the presence of gauge theory plasma with compact transverse direction. And so much like there is a phase transition at the equilibrium, if you wish, when the size of the thermal circle becomes the size of your compact direction, you can ask the same questions in this dynamical setup. Okay. All right. So, so what I'm gonna do now? I even though I'm off the time, but I think I have 5 minutes because I started late. So, I just want to relate probably to Pavel's talk last week and mention another feature. So you do all this computation, right? You find some universal features. And so some of them, which is very familiar, this ratio of shear viscosity to the entropy density, which is very robust. But in fact, there is another thing that is quite interesting. And so I wanna give you an idea of what that is. Again, it's on a much shakier ground in the sense that you cannot prove it. But I can give you a set of system in which you can explicitly do the computation, and it comes up to be correct. So first of all, let me write it down. What am I talking about? So I'm talking about non-conformal gauge series, so they have bulk viscosity. And so some things that people always neglect when they talk about hydrodynamic description at rigs, they just say bulk viscosity is zero. But now, once you have these examples of non-conformal gauge string duality, you can ask, how small is bulk viscosity? Okay, so this is a question that you can ask and answer. Now, it turns out that in all models, and I'm going to specify explicitly what I mean by that, the following identity is satisfied. Okay? So the ratio, there is a lower bound on the ratio of bulk viscosity to shear viscosity. So it depends on the dimension of your plasma, 1 over d. And d sub s is the speed of sound in your plasma. Now, I want the first thing you might notice immediately is that since we are talking about non-conformal gauge series, the speed of sound is no longer constant. So it depends on something that breaks your scale. So for example, the model that we discussed, it depends on m over t. And so the bound, unlike the familiar bound, eta over s equals 1 over 4 pi, which is a static bound, this bound is dynamical. And so when I'm making a statement like that, at least in the class of models that I claim it satisfied over the whole range of temperatures. So before I go, so there is less or equal. So let me tell you. So let me just discuss this bound, and that's where I will stop. So first of all, dynamical means that as you change temperature, the right-hand side changes, the left-hand side changes, but they change in such a way that the inequality remains true. Dynamical, I don't know, it's just again, whatever the meaning you want. I mean, I said what I said, right? So that thing depends on the temperature. That thing depends on the temperature as well. They change in the way that... So the bound is saturated, right? Saturated. So the bound is saturated so if you look at the DP brain plasma, right, only D3 is conformal, all the others are non-conformal and have bulk viscosity. So you will find out that this bound is saturated for all DP brains. So if you compute, take gauge theory living on the walled volume of a DP brain, you will find out that there is an equality sign. And I'm saying that's a non-trivial relation because, again, the right-hand side zero only for the D3 brain. It's also saturated in little string theory. So this is, I'm not going to go into detail what it is for people who know that, but just some other plasma living on the walled volume of funny objects in string theory. So the bound is saturated there as well. Even more surprisingly, surprisingly or not.
Does it mean it's a consequence of 16 supercharges?
There is no supersymmetry, right, in this. So these are so this all depends on the temperature. So there is no.
But still the Hamiltonian.
Right. So maybe I don't know. It can be interesting to prove. So finally, another thing that comes, there is a saturation. What happens here? Is that I can take this plasma, right, so which lives on RD comma 1, and I can compactify a k directions on the torus, right? So I can go from this into RD minus k comma 1 cross T sub k. So So now I actually have to tell you something what this D is. So this D is a little bit non-trivial. So this D is actually the number of infinitely large dimensions, right? So the hydrodynamics, when you write down the dispersion relations for sound waves, so on, it will be sensitive how many extended directions you have, right? Because hydrodynamics is there. Is a physics at arbitrary low energy scales. So you will find out that the bound will be saturated if you take this DP brain and you compactify it on a K torus. So in other words, so if I take psi over K, when I compactify K directions on the torus, so then the bound will still be true, but it will be a little bit non-trivial, so it will take this form. So there is a shift there, minus k, because once you compactify some of the directions, so the denominator changes. So what are the immediate consequences of this? So let me give you just an immediate consequence here. For example, I can take ADS7 cross S5, right? So if I take ADS7 cross S5, so the theory is conformal. So this is a gauge theory living on a walled volume of the 5 brain, right? So I can ask the question, what is psi over eta that is on the 5 brain, right? And so I just have to make the substitution. And unfortunately, I just don't want to make any mistakes. Right. So that's correct. So this is zero. But the thing is now what I can do, I can take M5 brain, and I can obtain a D4 brain as a M5 brain, Kaluza-Klein reduction of M5 brain in M theory on a circle, right? So KK on S1, and so I will get a D4 brain. And so the claim is that if I use this formula, so you can test it, so you will find out that psi over eta for a D4 equals 1/10, which is the result that you can compute independently. So I'm just saying that you can verify this this relation. The bound is saturated for these models, but it's actually non-trivial bound, for example, for n equal to star gauge theory. So you can study this model at wide range of temperatures, and you will find out that this bound is satisfied. Finally, it's not saturated. It is saturated at high temperature when you expect it to be saturated in a trivial way, because at high temperatures you are n equal 4.
The ratio of the eta and is one of the c-squared, which is 2 when you go to high temperature?
The speed of sound is squared is 1/3, right?
1/3, but depends on temperature.
Right, it depends on temperature. And so,
sure.
Right.
What I'm trying to ask is the ratio of the two sides.
Yes, it approached
to 1.
Yes, it approached to 2. Yes, I know what you're asking. Yes.
Okay, and the different question, sorry for the interruption. And if you put C squared to the left hand side, in this case combination, C eta plus 2 C squared.
Right.
Is it possible that this is some kind of two different correlation functions? And there is a kinematical relation.
Maybe. I don't know. But let me tell you something that is useful from that for Rick, okay? And that's what I will end. I feel like I need to say something that's of importance for Rick at least. Okay. Good. So and then you can look at this cascading gauge theory, the so-called Strassle-Klebanov-Zeitlin theory with a phase transition, and so you will find out that bound holds there as well. Now, I have to say that that's a bound that is known to be violated at weak coupling, but I'm not going to go into that details. And so, so this is a work by Guy Moore and company. So now I want to end with saying is that, okay, so we have this data. What is the bulk viscosity at RIC? Okay, how we can do this? Well, the first thing you have to answer for yourself, so you computed this psi over eta in some very esoteric theories, right? So the theory that there is some mass, how do I translate this in something that's relevant for QCD? What I'm saying is that, for example, in, say, n equal to star model, you computed it as a function of m over t. But what you can do the following. So so you know that as you change this this dimensionless ratio, the speed of sound will change. And so there is a one-to-one correspondence between what is my speed of sound and what is the scale that breaks conformal invariance. So what I'm saying is that I can invert this relation and express this relation for various models, for example, in a context of four-dimensional gauge theory plasma, I can say how is my ratio a function, how far is my equation of state differs from the conformal equation of state. So once I have this, and I can do this for a bunch of models, now what I can do, I can use lattice. I can use lattice computation, and I can say, okay, so I know the temperature relevant for RIC, it's whatever, T is of order 1.5 deconfinement temperature, and I can ask lattice people to tell me how far is my equation of state differ from the conformal equation of state, okay? And then I am going to use these models, a broad class of models, and make a prediction. What do you expect for RIC, the ratio of bulk viscosity to the shear viscosity? So the numbers that come in, and I'm going to explain, so this is a quite broad range. So it can be very tiny, right, almost vanishing. So this is, if you wish, that's how you would interpret how big is bulk viscosity as 1.5 times TD confinement. So it can be very tiny to it can be large. So when is it tiny? Okay, so it is tiny in the models in which the Hamiltonian have supersymmetry. So for example, this tiny result is in a context when the theory has 8 supercharges at zero temperature. On the other case, sorry, on the other hand, when my theory, so lots of SUSY. So in other words, I would say that an indication here is that if you study gauge theory plasma, which at zero temperature have lots of supersymmetries, you expect a very small bulk viscosity, even though it might not necessarily be conformal plasma. On the other hand, if you don't have a lot of supersymmetry or no supersymmetry at all, some of the models you can study, you actually expect quite a noticeable bulk viscosity. So no or few supersymmetries. So for people who are doing these simulations, so something that has been discussed before here, it would be nice to include all these corrections to Israel Stewart. But I think it's also important to take into account that there are indications from ADS-CFT that there is a substantial bulk viscosity. And even though I don't have an explicit number because I cannot do QCD, but you can, you know, sort of scan the range of models and you find out that it's quite noticeable at temperatures relevant.
I think that QCD belongs to this.
I would put QCD is closer to here. Yeah. Why? Because those are the models that, for example, have phase transitions. Again, just based on that. So there is no indication of any phase transitions happening in this class of models when I have lots of supersymmetry. Again, I don't have a justification. So.
Sorry? How do you
make
it? So you choose M.
No, I re-express my answer in terms of the speed. I tell you what the bulk viscosity as a function of the speed of sound. And then what I'm saying is that you tell me that I look at the QCD, right? And I know what the, I say that the temperature at RIC is 1.5 deconfinement temperature. I go to the lattice, I ask what the equation of state there is. What is the speed of sound at that temperature? And then I plug in the formula for the n equal 2 star, for example.
But in principle, you can do different matching, right? You don't have to match, you know, speed of sound. You can match, I don't know,
sure.
Mass of
the lightest, you know, sure. That's possible, and it's an interesting thing to see how robust this matching is. So that might give an indication whether any of this matching can make sense. I'm just telling you what they did.
Yeah. What's that ratio we
have? Right. So one thing is that at weak coupling, and there was a lot of discussions about this, is that so here you have a bound, right? So this, I can call this as a deviation from conformality, right? So what we are finding is that in a very large class of models, if you have a very small deviation from the conformality, then the bulk viscosity over shear viscosity is leading order in the deviation from non-conformality. So this is at strong coupling. And so one of the reasons why weak people have been neglecting bulk viscosity, because if you do weak coupling, you will get a factor here. So it's delta squared. In that formulation. No. Wait. So because notice that it's not, right? So this is for the delta, this is for the delta squared, right? So you have delta squared is larger than delta, but that's nonsensical at weak coupling, right? So that's why I'm saying that this bound, again, is a bound at only at strong coupling. But then you shouldn't be surprised. I mean, 8 over S, saturation, is also a statement.
Saturation, but the bound may be true.
Right, the bound may be true in general. So, okay. So yeah. Yeah.
And hook up some variable, or maybe just some attenuation.
Right.
It's actually called thing as a function of coupling, similar to
A to the left,
what would you expect?
Right.
It's more weak coupling.
Right. So I don't know how to. Okay. So I think I have to suggest that we stop because some people are leaving, and I will stay here. And so if people are interested, I can continue answering questions.
Is there a couple of bounds?